Hello, friend. Welcome back to the Shanti Ma Podcast. This is episode 14. Today I sit down with Dr. Justine Lemos. Dr. Justine Lemos is an Ayurvedic practitioner, Vedic astrologer, author, teacher, yoga teacher, dancer, speaker, and that's just to name a few. She is the founder of the Bliss Academy at One Yoga and has been featured on Gaia TV in a series called Thrive, Self-Healing with Ayurveda. She also has several individual as well as group programs online available to those of you interested in learning more about healing with Ayurveda. Today we discuss what Ayurveda is, the different types of body and elements that make up a person's unique constitution, imbalances of sleep, diet, and lifestyle, as well as some traditional cleansing remedies. This episode is an overview of what Ayurveda is, but is by no means intended to act or provide medical treatment. If you want to learn more or go through the process, it is recommended that you do it under the guidance of an experienced and well-trained practitioner. And that goes for astrology too. I hope you enjoy the episode. And if you do, please remember to subscribe. But before we jump into today's episode, do you want to become a certified yoga teacher or expand on the training you already have? Deep Yoga Academy and IYSAR are offering a 50-hour online structural yoga therapy training course. If you aren't already familiar with Deep's work, I recommend you go back to my episode 4 and give it a listen. Explore philosophy, posture, breathing, and practical anatomy in a unique approach that blends both Eastern and Western wisdom. This course is specifically designed to explore the body and mind in order to understand the therapeutic aspect of yoga. You will learn how to analyze structural imbalances, posture, and methods, and unite the breath, body, and brain in order to manage mental and physical disorders. This course runs from December 1st to December 19th, and if you register before November 10th, you will receive a $50 discount. Use the code SHANTI50 to receive an additional $50 off now. Go to www.deepyogaacademy.com to reserve your spot now. Welcome, Justine.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I really am honored that you invited me to do this.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here also. For those of you listening, Justine has a really fantastic series that she was in on Gaia TV. It's called Thrive. And this lady knows her stuff. So we're going to dive into some questions that I have about Ayurveda. But first, let's start with kind of your background and history and how you even found Ayurveda.
So it's a bit of a long story, so I won't like belabor the story. My training is in academics and I have multiple higher degrees. And I was living in India on a Fulbright grant to do research. And I was actually suffering from some chronic pain. I had had chronic shoulder pain since childhood, really. And I had training in classical dance and in several forms, and actually have studied classical Indian dance for 23 years with my guru. So I was suffering from all this chronic pain, and we became really close friends with this young man whose father was the first Ayurvedic pharmacist who was Muslim in South India, in Kerala, where we are living. Ayurveda is traditionally held by the Hindu culture, but in this case, he was, because of the very more open culture of Kerala, his father was the first, he said, I believe it was true, first Muslim Ayurvedic pharmacist in Kerala. And so because we became friends with them, we would sit for long hours and days in the rice paddies in his pharmacy. And they would show us the herbs. And sometimes I would sit with the women and while they're rolling little tiny handmade Ayurvedic pills. And I just started to learn what Ayurveda was. I didn't start to train in Ayurveda. Then, of course, Kerala, where we were living, and we've lived a great deal. And at one point, I spoke Malayalam, which is the language of Kerala, fairly well. And Ayurveda is a recognized medicine in Kerala. So is homeopathy. And it's really a stronghold of traditional Ayurveda. And so it's really integrated everywhere, just in normal lifestyle in Kerala. Mm-hmm. Like there are certain things you don't do. Like we were out eating with friends, and one friend ordered ice cream, and an older gentleman said, "Don't take the ice cream, you're going to get a sore throat." And so just that kind of like wisdom of Ayurveda is embedded in everyday life and culture. When I came back from India several times and finished my doctoral work, I decided I wanted to undertake training in Ayurveda. And I mostly wanted to undertake training in Ayurveda to have a system of wellness available for myself and for my family, and not just like randomly buying supplements or herbs or following the latest wellness trend in diet or whatever it was. I wanted to really understand a comprehensive system of wellness that had ancient roots. And because I trained in classical Indian dance and in yoga and yogic philosophy, Ayurveda seemed the obvious and natural choice for those studies. And so I undertook studies in Ayurveda, Ayurvedic herbology, Ayurvedic counseling, which is the equivalent of Ayurvedic psychology, as well as Vedic astrology. And really during that training was when I started to make lifestyle adjustments and take herbs, and was able to completely rectify my chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have any pain at all anymore, which is quite wonderful personally. I decided, I can open a practice and have, basically an Ayurvedic practice as an Ayurvedic doctor. And then it was, Gaia reached out to me to do that series. I was really happy with how the Thrive series came out, because it was able to distill so much Ayurvedic wisdom into like a really easy to understand format. And I frequently tell my clients, I'm like, okay, you need to learn about oil massage. You need to learn about spice making. Here's this video. You can watch it. It's 10 minutes long or whatever. And people really enjoy that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very well done series. It looked great. They had great visuals, great interviews. And I definitely followed along. Let's just say I have like several towels that can no longer be used because they're so full of oil.
That's wonderful. That's super great. I'm so glad.
So for people that don't know what Ayurveda is, can we kind of get into that, and then we'll go from there and talk about some other stuff?
Sure. Ayurveda literally means the science of life. And it is a holistic system of wellness that has its origins in ancient India. However, it has vast application for modern day. It's not just Indian wellness. Like sometimes people think, well, if I'm going to eat Ayurvedically, it must mean that I eat foods from India all the time or having their origins. That's not what it means. It's a system of knowledge around wellness that it's really comprehensive and really has a lot of application for our modern life. So it's a system of wellness, both for body and for mind and for emotions and for spirit. So it is comprehensive in its scope.
Perfect. Okay. Also, I was just going to say, I'm not sure if there's like a little bit of feedback on your end, but there's like some little bit of sounds. I'm not sure what there is going on, but I thought I would let you know. So sorry for anybody that's listening to this, but okay. So, I'd love to then talk about the doshas, and I hope I'm saying that right, but okay. The doshas. Yeah. I'm Pitta, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. So, I want to talk about them in two parts, I think.
Okay.
And the first thing is doshas are universal intelligences, and really everything in the universe can be understood in terms of its makeup. The ancient wisdom of Ayurveda divided things into five elemental categories of earth and water, fire, air, and ether. And they were not so innocent as to say that the body really is made of fire and earth and water. Rather, they used these as qualitative metaphors to both, for both the constitution, that is our blueprint, our kind of soul blueprint that we enter into the world with, and then also the places where we leave that soul blueprint and deviate into imbalance. So these five elements group together. Earth and water come together, creating something that is very cold and stable and wet. And this is we call kapha dosha. Fire comes together with a little bit of water, so a moist, hot, humid energy. And this we call pitta dosha. Air and ether group together in something that is very light and dry and rough and changeable. And this we call vata dosha. Now, kapha dosha is responsible for anything in the universe that is strength and stability. And in the body, it has to do with our immunity. Pitta dosha is really about transformation and digestion and metabolism, whereas vata dosha is really about communication, transportation, and movement. Anything that creates movement is ruled by vata dosha. So we all have all three doshas in our constitution, our prakriti, our constitution, our blueprint that our soul comes in with that manifests into this body. And then we also have the ability to deviate in any direction. Now, people like to say, I am pitta, I am vata, I am kapha, much like we would use a kind of trivialized system of astrology. We begin to identify, I am Aries, therefore I do these things. Mm-hmm. I am Scorpio, therefore I am intense, whatever it is, right? And what is more interesting, the constitution, it's interesting. It's kind of the stable root self that you move with throughout your life. And the best way to see this is from analyzing the body and from looking at the Vedic astrology chart. At the moment of birth, what does the soul come in with? Mm-hmm. However, from a clinical perspective, and this is where like Ayurvedic educators, Ayurvedic yoga teachers, which is like 100 hours of training or 50 hours of training, deviate from clinical practitioners who are more like Ayurvedic doctors. What is more interesting is where you are out of balance, because a kapha person can manifest a vata imbalance. And we need to rectify vata dosha for that kapha person. And so things become very complicated very quickly, which is why I have a kind of issue around, in one way, it's really wonderful. Ayurveda has become popularized via yoga, like through Yoga Journal and publications. And you can go online and take dosha tests. However, nobody tries to DIY Chinese medicine. They're like, it's too complex. I don't understand it. But for Ayurveda, there's a lot of do-it-yourself, which is wonderful and empowering. But we need to actually take analytical measures like pulse analysis, face analysis, tongue analysis to actually, if there's an imbalance like chronic pain or, indigestion, eczema, hot flashes, to actually know what the root of the imbalance is. So that's a kind of answer about doshas and what we've kind of done with the information of doshas in our modern Western world.
Well, that's a great explanation. And it's interesting because when I was trying to follow along the best I could with the Thrive series a couple of years ago, and I also have a book, and there was a point where I was like, there's definitely an imbalance. But I'm in over my head. This is too complex. And I realize that the more you start like learning and digging into it, there is just so much knowledge. And when I was in India in 2017, I did Panchakarma with a doctor in like McLeod Ganj area. And some of the experience that I had had there was what had really broke my mind open to this stuff works. And because, you know, I'd seen different naturopaths before and never really found, it was just felt like a guessing game, lots of supplements, and I'll take more, take more. And then I started, it was actually because I had a fever. I got really sick and people kept saying, oh, go see Dr. Sharma, go see Dr. Sharma. And enough people had said to go see him. So I was like, okay, I go see him. And he gave me some herbal little pills that got rid of my fever literally within like a couple of hours. And then I was like, okay, all right. So I went back and did almost a month of Panchakarma to get me off of birth control because my hormones, my skin, I wasn't even getting a period. It was insane. And he fixed me right up. So I've just been like waiting to dive back into it. But one of the things that I find so sad is that we don't actually, we don't have a lot of this available to us here. At least like in my area, I don't know any Ayurvedic doctors.
I know a couple of people in Canada who are really well-trained Ayurvedic doctors. And, you know, now I've always had an online portion to my practice and do online consults all the time. Mm-hmm. But that said, most Ayurvedic doctors are doing consults online. So the wealth of knowledge that's available is actually expanding. So, you know, that's available to people, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's just, it would be nice to see if, it'd be nice to see if there was like Panchakarma available for people who are suffering.
I don't know with the pandemic, I don't know where is offering Panchakarma, but there are several really good Panchakarma facilities in the US that are quite good. And Panchakarma is literally five Panchakarma actions. It's a fairly intensive form of Ayurvedic cleansing and rejuvenation. There are forms of Panchakarma that you can do mini Panchakarma at home for yourself, because Panchakarma, especially in US, can be very, very expensive. If you go to India, it can be less expensive, though you really want to go to a good Ayurvedic center for Panchakarma. Mm-hmm. If you're traveling or in India, there are some that are really, really good and have very good doctors. And then there are others that are more like tourist attractions and I don't trust them as much. But Panchakarma is a fairly intensive form of cleansing and rejuvenation that is done. You know, it's it can be done for healthy people periodically or yearly, but we really use it when there is a deep-seated chronic imbalance, like you're talking about with hormones and birth control. And sometimes when people come to my practice, I don't have a Panchakarma facility. It's not something I have built and staff to do. And so if there's a really deeply rooted imbalance, I'll say, okay, you need to go do Panchakarma. Mm-hmm. I would say 80% of the time, even more 90% of the time, there's enough that we can do with herbs, diet, lifestyle, at home practices that they don't have to go to Panchakarma, and gentle cleansing, Virechana, things like that. But some cases that are really deeply rooted, then we need to send them to Panchakarma to have that done.
Okay. And for people listening, I just realized I'm like, you guys don't know what we're talking about. Can you give some examples of what Panchakarma is?
So it's, so like I said, it's Ayurvedic cleansing. There are many different forms of Panchakarma. We should take note, but usually it deals with heating the body up and then deeply oileating the body. So you might go through Ayurvedic massage, you might have Shirodhara, continuous pouring of oil on the forehead, you might have Basti or Ayurvedic herbal enemas, you might have a variety of different operations to cleanse the body and then rejuvenate the body. You might have sweating, Svedana. So there are all these different treatments that will be done specific for you that are kind of spa-like, but they're way more intense than that, that will be done. So Panchakarma isn't always the same for every single person. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be the same for every single person. Like there are Panchakarma packages be a little bit skeptical of those. You really want an individual course of Panchakarma. It will always involve cleansing the body, some purgation, and then rejuvenation via oil massage and oiliation.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So what are the ways in which imbalances manifest in the body? And how do we, because I feel like it's from my understanding.
What are the ways that imbalance, what is the root cause of imbalance? Or what do you mean? Tell me what you mean more by the question.
So in what ways do people manifest imbalances? So lifestyle, diet, like how, what are the things that people are doing on a regular basis that
so what are the causes of imbalance? Yeah. Not how the, because basically there are four pillars of health in Ayurveda. Mm-hmm. And those are digestion, elimination, sleep. And then for women, menstruation. Men don't get the fourth, they get cleansing. And it's thought that the reason why women live longer than men is because they menstruate regularly. So if there's any gas or pain and bloating, that's a manifestation of imbalance. If elimination is not perfect, that's a manifestation of imbalance. If sleep is not perfect, it shows that the body is going out of balance. If menstruation is not perfect, if there's pain, if there's cramps, if there's, you know, a headache, shows that the body is going out of balance. So those are the four pillars of health, and you can quite easily check yourself. And even before any other symptoms manifest in Ayurveda, there are six stages of symptom manifestation. Four of those are before you feel or see anything overtly. So for example, say someone has arthritis in their fingers. Okay, they've just started to develop pain in their fingers and it's chronic. There are four stages in the body that happened before that pain manifested that they have no idea about, that an Ayurvedic practitioner could feel in the pulses months before, years before it manifests in pain in the fingers.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. And the things that lead to these imbalances, we have to think of on many different levels, because you mentioned diet and lifestyle, but we need to go to a bigger vantage. Why is one person born with a leg that is misshapen and then other person is not? And so from an Ayurvedic perspective, there are actually karmic seeds that can cause imbalances.
Ooh.
And part of my job is, as a practitioner, is to look at the biggest vantage. And we do that through the Vedic astrological chart, because I can see, well, oh, you're suffering from chronic pain. There's actually this marker that would create a lot of vata dosha, vata, pain is always vata dosha, that would create a lot of pain at this time in your life. Now, does that mean we don't take remedies for that? No, we absolutely do take remedies for that, but we have to know that there's this bigger pattern going on.
Hmm.
And then take remedies for that largest pattern. So there can be karmic seeds that cause imbalance. There can be emotional seeds that cause imbalance, right? Unprocessed emotions and anger, we know, cause problems with the heart. Western science knows that, right? There can be subtle body blockages that cause imbalances in the subtle body, in the chakras, because of chronic emotional and thought pattern imbalance. Then we get to the physical body. Your lifestyle, your diet, your use of screens, your lack of time in nature, whatever it is. But do you see how that's all the way at the very bottom?
Hmm.
And everyone thinks, oh, if I get on the right diet, my eczema will be gone. It will help. But if that eczema, and eczema is often, well, let's take acne, actually, because acne is a better example. Everyone thinks if I get on the right diet, my acne will be gone. It will help, but acne almost always has a deeply, it has to do with digestive fire and the digestion being quite weak, but it almost always has a pattern of anger and difficulty with the mother figure that has to be healed in order to heal the acne. And so we want to get on the right diet. We want to get on the right diet, but we also want to heal that deeper underlying pattern that's causing the whole physiology to go out of balance. So this is how I mean Ayurveda is holistic. It isn't just diet and lifestyle and some essential oils and panchakarma.
Interesting. What about hair loss, for an example? I'm curious.
In men or in women or in both?
Both.
Mm-hmm. Well, traditionally, I mean, there are genetic patterns that cause hair loss. And so what is a genetic pattern? It's a karmic pattern from our ancestors. Mm-hmm. And so there's like that. That's a very big pattern. And some of those largest karmic patterns, we aren't going to be able to shift. Just like the child with type 1 diabetes, we can't Ayurveda our way out of that. And actually, they talk about type 1 diabetes in Ayurvedic texts, and they say that this is a tragedy and we can't fix it, right? It's like inherent. So there is a part of hair loss that can be like we can't work against it. However, hair loss and the pattern of hair loss is when too much heat is going up to the crown of the head and moving out of the crown of the head. It often has to do with a pattern of overthinking and multitasking. It is a combination of Vata dosha mixing with Pitta dosha that moves up into the hair. The hair and the fingernails have to do with our bones, our Ashti Dhatu, the bone level of the body. So especially in women, hair loss has a correlation with bone density and hormone balance.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Cause I definitely shed quite a bit of hair, but, what I was curious about as well, cause someone had said this to me before, and I think it was my Ayurvedic doctor in India. And he was saying about the things that you bring into your body, like food, it builds up into, and what turns later into tissue. And I was trying to remember, I was trying to tell somebody else that I had on my podcast this, we were briefly talking about this and I couldn't remember. So now that I have you on, would you explain that?
Sure. So Ayurvedically, the digestive process takes about 30 days. And there are 6 different layers of tissue in the body. I won't go through all of them. They're called Sapta Dhatu, that build one on top of the other to create the physiology. And the process of digestion, which is very prized in Ayurveda, it has to happen perfectly to feed all of those layers of tissue. And if there's a blockage, either in digestion or in one of the tissue layers, it causes all sorts of infirmity. It causes all sorts of disease. It causes all sorts of illness. So we have to keep digestion very, very strong. And we have to keep all the shrotas, all of the channels clear and clean.
Okay. And when it comes to, you were saying the different layers and before it actually manifests on a physical level, like the imbalance, for an example, I wanted to lightly touch on the disease pathways and the overflow that happens, just because I find that so fascinating. And I'm sure other people will also.
So tell me a little bit more about I'm unclear about the question.
So the disease pathways in Ayurveda, from my understanding, when you have an imbalance in one part of the body and it builds up and now it's filled up its respected site, it starts to overflow and look for other places in the body to fill up. And from my understanding, there's like quite the different process of the disease finding other ways to manifest in the body from there. So I was just curious if you would be able to touch on that, because I don't fully understand it myself, but I find it fascinating that overflow can travel in different directions in the body.
So I think what you're talking about is AMMA, or metabolic, like what is loosely translated as metabolic waste. And AMMA is the anything that is undigested emotionally, mentally, physically, whatever is undigested, it is described in Ayurveda as AMMA, which is a thick, undigested substance that travels on the bloodstream to anywhere in the body where there's weakness or imbalance. And AMMA clogs everything up and is one root cause of disease.
Okay.
If there is an imbalance in a system of the body, it is likely that other parts of the physiology will accumulate that same imbalance. So for example, Vata dosha is like air and ether. It moves very fast. And one of the seats of Vata dosha is the nervous system. Vata dosha accumulates in the nervous system. So when there's a lot of anxiety in the mind, it tends to accumulate in other sites of Vata dosha. For example, the colon. The colon is also a spacious area in the body that's ruled by Vata dosha. So someone with a lot of anxiety, we can expect to see constipation. The stool gets dry and hard, and the motion of the colon, which actually has to squeeze to push out elimination, gets very weak because Vata dosha is accumulating. Furthermore, that person with Vata dosha accumulation, now they're anxious, they're chronically anxious, now they're having difficulty falling asleep, now they're having constipation, now Vata dosha starts to accumulate in another area of the body that is spacious, which is the joints. There's actually space in the body, ether and air. And so constipation, then suddenly we have chronic pain in the joints. And then we have it start to accumulate in the bones, and we have arthritis. We have osteoarthritis and the degeneration of the bones. So this is kind of how things begin, and they accumulate and go deeper into their pathway. Yeah. And that's just one example. We can look at it on so many different levels. Now, where it gets complicated is we can have Vata dosha affecting Pitta dosha. And we can have Vata dosha affecting Pitta dosha at the level of the muscles, at the level of Mamsa dosha, Dhatu. So things can get very complex very, very quickly. And this is why I always tell people, do some self-analysis, but really get some expertise as to what is actually going on in the body beyond the kind of overt level.
Okay, so fascinating. I'm just like soaking this all up. Okay, so actually, before we get into some practical tools, food is medicine, and, you know, understanding some of this for people that they can start to, you know, take away, I actually wanted to ask, it was something that I had read in one of my books on Ayurveda about astral influences and the subtle body. Can we talk about that a little bit? What do you know about
planetary influence on the subtle body?
Well, that's what I had read. And cause I know that like Vedic astrology, for an example, like I have an interesting chart to say the least. But when it comes to it said that sometimes when the subtle body becomes weakened by, you know, illness and stress and all these things, that you can become susceptible to astral influence. So other energies and beings coming in and like wreaking havoc on a spiritual level. And so with like your training and everything that, you know, I thought I would ask you about that because I read it in a book. It would probably be better to actually ask somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Yes, sure. This is certainly possible. In 90% of the cases, it's not really what is happening. Mm-hmm. And actually the planetary influences on the subtle body are kind of more, they're more common and more relevant because the planets have correlations to the chakras. And so the planets in the signs relate to the chakras, and we can see the Vedic astrological chart as a blueprint of someone's chakras. And we can really, you know, if they have Mars relates to the energy of the third chakra, the navel chakra, which has to do with digestion. If they have debilitated and retrograde Mars, you can look at their chart and you can pretty much bet they're going to have stomach pain or stomach problems or ulcers or something going on in their stomach, just without even doing a deep analysis. But in terms of like astral entities and, other sorts of things, most people are so, their subtle body and their physical body are so deeply entrenched with ama, metabolic waste, excess, too much there in the mind, that if there are astral influences, they won't even, like, they won't notice that. Like, that's not, this is the example I'll give you. I had a client come in who was obsessed with whether for her dosha, she should be using maple syrup or honey in her tea. And she like really wanted to know what was best for her. Problem was, she was a like pack a day smoker. And I was like, well, it doesn't really matter because you're smoking 20 cigarettes a day. So like that completely overrides like priorities, honey or maple syrup. Your body doesn't care. Like it is busy processing nicotine and everything that's in the cigarettes that you're taking in. Right. So we have to really prioritize what will bring us into most wellness. And while for some people, it might be easy to say, I have this illness because I have some astral entity on me. Like most of the time, we've got some lifestyle things to deal with that are going to override that. And yeah, once you get your lifestyle like figured out and you're sleeping well and digesting well and eliminating well, then we can take a look at those astral entities. But like, let's be real first about what is actually happening. Like, are you drinking a bottle of red wine every night? That's going to have some impact on your physiology that we need to deal with before we deal with your astral entities.
I love that. That's perfect. Well, thank you. No, it's so true. It's so true. It's really funny when, that applies to so many things where people, they get really stuck on certain things and then it's like, but they're not seeing the other things in the lifestyle that, like, that's, you know, right, drinking.
You know what? It's so frequent that people come in and the thing that they think is really healthy is the thing that we have to take away. And they're like, but that's my healthy thing. And I'm like, yeah, you're eating a smoothie in the morning with frozen blueberries and lettuce and spirulina and peanut butter. And you wonder why you have IBS. Like you can't do that first thing in the morning. And then they stop doing it. And they're like, I don't have IBS anymore. It's a miracle. I'm like, no, it's because you stopped eating a head of lettuce with cold blueberries in the morning. Like, this is not going to work.
Okay, that's actually a really good point. Let's talk about why smoothies are actually not healthy for you.
Well, the main reason, well, there's two reasons. Reason one is they are cold and frozen. And Ayurvedically, we don't really like really much of anything that's cold and frozen because it freezes the digestive fire. And that makes digestion improper, which leads to all sorts of problems. The second reason can be, it's not always this, but it can be like way too much stuff. Like your body doesn't really want to process peanut butter and a head of lettuce and spirulina and like 20 different mushroom powders and frozen blueberries, like in a slurry. Like it doesn't want to process all of that information at once because it's not balanced. It's not a balanced, intelligent kind of meal. And our culture really, our food follows our culture. And because we're really obsessed with doing things quickly and eating while we do things and not taking time to eat, a smoothie becomes like the perfect food for our culture. Unfortunately, our bodies haven't evolved to process the smoothie very well.
Right. And actually, as you were saying that about this sort of, you know, culture of instant everything and quick, you know, this go, 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 there were two things that I wanted to mention. That go, go, go culture, from my understanding, in itself can cause some, that's a, like a lifestyle imbalance, I believe. And then the eating while you watch TV. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about those things. I want your opinion on those two things.
So absolutely, you know, our like culture of going all the time and doing all the time is vata aggravating. We have a vata and pitta aggravating culture. That's just what we have. Mm-hmm. The body needs to focus, and the mind does best when it focuses on one thing at a time. And when we watch TV, scroll feeds, do things while we eat, we split our mind from our body and we can't enjoy our food or digest well. And Ayurvedically, like I said at the very beginning, everybody thinks it's all about if they just get their diet perfectly, they'll be perfectly healthy. Ayurvedically, how we eat is as important, if not more important, than what we eat. I want to say that again. How we eat is as important, if not more important, than what we eat. So you could have the most perfectly balanced Ayurvedic diet for your own body, and you could not, and you could be eating all the time while you're really angry and eating on the go while looking at screens. You're not going to digest well. And you're going to generate health imbalance or perpetuate the health imbalances that are already there.
Okay. All right. So with that, I would like to get a few practical sort of takeaways that we can give people when it comes to foods or herbs that they can implement more into their diet, as well as some lifestyle and sleep stuff.
So the first thing is, let's talk about herbs first. Herbs are very powerful. And all the time when people come into my practice, I have to take them off many of the herbs that they're taking, because they aren't right for their physiology and they're perpetuating their imbalance. So that's thing one. Thing two is, Ayurvedically, we almost always use herbs in combination together. We almost never, there's like one or two cases where we give a single herb, usually amalaki or amla berry on its own, but we almost always give herbs in synergistic combinations in formulas that are well crafted for someone's physiology. And so I always kind of shudder when I see the marketing on like ashwagandha that you should be for stress. No, it's you, first of all, or turmeric, just take turmeric for your joints. The reason why turmeric, one reason why turmeric works for your joints so well is that it's traditionally used in combination with cumin, with coriander, with black pepper, because they create a synergy together. And actually, turmeric should not be used by people with gastrointestinal distress because it's very light and hot and drying. And so like somebody with gastritis or ulcers, they're going to suffer tremendously if they use a lot of turmeric, or really if they use any turmeric. So while I think it's really wonderful that we have all these substances available to us, it's like we don't have the knowledge base. We're being marketed all these things that we don't have real wisdom about. And so that can be dangerous for people. So I never give herbal recommendations as a blanket kind of recommendation. They really have to be individualized because we can get into more trouble than we began with. The second question is about diet. And Ayurvedically, there are six tastes. Those are sweet, salty, pungent, astringent, bitter, and sweet, sour is the last one. Each of those tastes has a correlation to the elements and has an effect on the doshas. The Ayurvedic wisdom is that every meal should have all six tastes. And this used to freak me out because I was like, oh my God, do I have to cook six different dishes for every meal? Because that would seem really hard. But actually, we can create a really well-balanced meal without too much trouble. For example, like quinoa is astringent. So if we made like quinoa and kale cakes, like, you know, like patties that were lightly sauteed, we'd get bitter and astringent. We'd get the bitter from the kale. We'd get the astringent from the quinoa. And let's say we put an avocado sauce over them. Avocado actually transmits the sweet taste because it's very fatty. And sweet taste in Ayurveda is like rice is sweet, meat is sweet. Avocado is sweet, and so are fruits. Now, if we made a chutney on the side, a fresh chutney that was made of like date and raisins and orange juice and like different spices, cumin, coriander, fennel in the spices, there we'd get more sweet. We'd get sour from the orange juice that's in the chutney. We'd get some pungency from the cumin spice that's in there. So all of a sudden we've got like all these tastes and we've only made two things. And so most Ayurvedic cookbooks will give ideas for meals that are very balanced in the tastes. So most people's diets are lacking bitter taste. And this is one reason, most Western diets are lacking bitter taste. And this is one reason why people are very attracted to coffee. Because in addition to the caffeine, it gives them, and chocolate, it gives them a deep dose of this bitter flavor. But bitter is the most vata provoking of the tastes. So people who are just eating raw kale all the time get very vata provoked because it's very rough and dry. And so while all six tastes should be present in meals, and we can do that very easily by making one or two dishes, the balance of those tastes can be proportionate to your doshic imbalances. The tastes that are balancing to vata dosha are sweet, sour, and salty, with salty being the most balancing to vata. And so increasing those tastes for someone with a vata dosha imbalance will cause balance in the physiology. It will balance things out, which is why an important question that I always ask people is, so what are you craving? Because this tells us a lot about what is happening in the physiology. If you're craving a ton of sweet and salty things, well, there's probably a vata dosha imbalance happening in the body.
Wow. Okay. And it's so interesting because as I'm sitting here and I'm like trying to take all this in, it just becomes so obvious how complex and detailed Ayurveda really is. It's not like, you know, like I feel like you really do need to have a practitioner or a doctor who really knows what they're doing to guide you through this, because there's just so many things to consider.
So if you are relatively like, you're like, check out your four pillars of health, and you're like, I sleep great, I poop great, I digest great, which is separate from your pooping, and my menstruation is great. Then you can DIY like from a book and be like, I am Pitta Dosha, I do these things great. Mm-hmm. But if you've got eczema or hot flashes or chronic pain or arthritis or like a health imbalance that's manifesting in your body, then you're going to need some more guidance to really figure out what the root of that is. And also you need to be aware that Ayurvedically we state that any imbalance that has been long-term, it takes a longer time to overcome it. Like a cold that we just got last week, we're going to get over that in a week or two. It's short term because it's not rooted in the physiology. But if we've had an imbalance for 20 years, we can't expect that just by changing the diet and lifestyle, it will be gone in 1 month. I wish that were the case, but generally speaking, it's not. We need to stay with new routines for the course of a year or longer, or for the rest of the lifetime. To really, it's not like we get to get off the coffee and the red wine and all these things, fix our health imbalance, and then go back to the bad habits, because that doesn't work. It really, we really need to have a whole lifestyle revolution, which is why the clients that I see the most success with are the ones who do individual consults and then do like group work, or in like a group that has regular meetings for accountability. Like, are you meditating? Are you, you know, taking your spice water? Are you doing your oil massage? Because without that, we're in a vacuum, especially if the people in our family are not also practicing the same wellness techniques that we are, you know? And we also can't get angry at them for not practicing the same wellness techniques, because that can be a whole nother package.
Well, you know, like let's say with TV in the evenings and screens and phones and all of that, like when I was following along with the Thrive series, I was, you know, turning all screens off, dimming lights, lighting candles, telling my body it was time to slow down, and like going for a walk after dinner. Having my kitchery, I was doing so good, and I was feeling really good. And I was doing the oil massage and meditation, and my mind started to become clearer and clearer and clearer, and my sleep started to drastically improve. But I know it works. but like you said about it, like being in a vacuum, when you tell people, I'm unwinding for the night at 6 p.m. They're like, you are insane. And so I realized our apartment is too small for me to basically own the whole space. My, you know, boyfriend's just unwinding and trying to do his own thing. But, you know, that's where it becomes really difficult, because you're like, I know that I want to change this lifestyle, but it is a total overhaul. It's like a complete makeover compared to what you're so used to, at least for me, and what I've grown up with as normal.
Yes, that's totally right. And that, so like, there are always ways to, like, as long as you aren't trying to shove it in your partner's face, like, they'll let you generally do your thing. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to like negotiate. You can like get them a really good pair of headphones and like let them watch TV and just realize like, that's the best this energy can do right now, and be happy for them, right? Mm-hmm. It's when we try to like force our partner to be the things that we be, that then it's just an ego trip for us, really. Mm-hmm. And like, that doesn't work at all. So we can create space for ourselves, but that thing of having a container, this is why I often, you know, I really encourage my clients to like, I have an Ayurvedic renewal program that combines like 4 one-on-one consults and then 8 group meetings that are like bi-weekly, where you're just like in a video call with just people who are trying, and people get to be like, well, this is my thing that I'm trying to do right now. This is the thing that I'm working to rectify. And just being like witnessed in a group creates so much more accountability than just one-on-one of me being like, you need to do your oil massage every day because you have a vata imbalance, and then you do it once. But like being in that group, you're like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do my oil massage every day. And so it creates community because, I mean, in, you know, in Panchakarma centers in India, you're like in it and you have to do it. And even in the culture of Kerala, people do oil massage. It's just like part of the culture. And in, I've lived in villages in India, nobody does anything else while they are eating. Like that would be really weird. Like, why are you doing, you like, you just eat and you just enjoy your food. And you don't even really talk while you eat. You just eat while you are eating. But here, that's like a radical thing to do. And so we need support to make that change.
Well, and this is the thing, like it's funny, at the root of it all and at the core of it all, my partner and I were on the same page, but we are also very different people. And our apartment is this little one bedroom. So I don't know if you can see right over there. That's, so instead of a coffee table, he let me make a giant shrine, and that's where I do my yoga. But then right here in the exact same room is our TV. So, you know, we're also realizing we're outgrowing this space a little bit, but that's where it's, you know, when you're trying to do something like this, you're like, okay, I feel like I need a designated yoga room. Like I need a designated yoga room where I can go in and I can do my meditation and then do my oil massage and put myself to bed. So let's actually talk about why oil massage is so great. And are there situations where people should not be doing oil massage?
Yes, we'll talk about that. But I also, we can allow anything to be an obstacle to our practice. And it is just another trick of our mind. That says, I will meditate when I have my meditation room. Because then when you get that meditation room, the mind will tell you, well, I will meditate tomorrow when I feel like it will be more useful to meditate, whatever it is. So we do not need the conditions to be perfect in order to do practice. In fact, it is the conditions that are imperfect that become the fuel for our practice. And it is better to practice in imperfect conditions.
Okay.
So.
I appreciate you calling me out on that.
Yeah, I'm kind of good at that. It's my thing. Okay. So oil massage, Ayurvedic Abhyanga, is a practice of self-massage where you slather your body in oil and you rub it all in. You can watch the video. And then you take a warm shower. Like that's the basic kind of gist of it. And it's really deeply therapeutic. It's good for the joints. It's good for the skin. It's really good for the nervous system because the nervous system extends throughout the whole body. And we use it as a remedy for many, many things and as part of Ayurvedic lifestyle. Cases when Abhyanga is not indicated are when we're sick, we shouldn't do Abhyanga. When we are menstruating, if the menstruation is like the heavy flow days, we probably shouldn't do Abhyanga. We can do it afterwards or when the flow is lighter. If the body, if there's a large kapha dosha imbalance, there's a lot of weight gain, there's a lot of sluggishness in the body, there's heaviness, then oil massage is really, really heating.
I think we had a little, I lost you at the, what happens with kapha.
Yeah, I think I'm back. So we, like if it's a large kapha dosha imbalance, then oil massage is not indicated. But there are oils that are good for specific bodies. Sesame oil is very good for vata dosha. Sunflower oil is very good for pitta dosha. Mustard seed oil is very good for kapha dosha, but it's very, very heating. There are beautiful herbalized oils that smell really good that are created for not essential oils in oil, but actually herbalized oils that are created for various body types. But you don't have to have that. You can really get most of the benefit from just slathering yourself in oil, leaving it on for, it doesn't have to be very long. We get the benefit really from just having it on the body and then a warm shower. Okay. For many people, this can help with sleep and put them to sleep. For some people, it's like too stimulating. It wakes them up. And so then we can do it in the morning instead of at night.
Okay. And for sleep and some of the, because I feel like that's something that so many people are struggling with, you would recommend that if that is a relax or that has a relaxing effect on them to try that, but if they find it to be too stimulating to just do it in the next day.
Yes. And we can still see benefit for helping the sleep if we're not doing it right before bed.
Okay.
So it can still be a sleep therapy, not done before we fall asleep. For most people, you know, I don't want to get too far into sleep imbalances because it's a complicated thing and mm-hmm. can have a few different sources, but most people are living out of rhythm with the cycles of the day and the cycles of the moon. And this creates imbalances in the endocrine system, in the pituitary gland, which affects the whole glandular system and the hormone system.
Okay.
And so with difficulty falling asleep, which is a common sleep imbalance, and early morning wakings between 2 and 4 a.m., which are another very common Ayurvedic or common imbalance. People wake up at 3 in the morning and are wide awake and can't go back to sleep until 6 a.m. and then they sleep until however long. We need lifestyle adjustments. We need a bedtime routine that is followed pretty like strictly. We need to stop screens. We need to stop using screens in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bed is, we should be training our mind that this is where we sleep, not this is where we've got the eyes riveted on a bright screen.
Mm-hmm.
Take your TV out of your bedroom if you have one in your bedroom. And then usually we need herbal remedies to really rectify sleep imbalances.
Okay. Yeah. I've never had a TV in my bedroom, and I've also never been able, unless I'm really sick with the flu, I cannot fall asleep in front of the TV. And other people, that's like the thing that puts them to sleep. But from my understanding, that also messes with your melatonin, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what would be some common imbalances or things, sorry, that imbalance period health and hormones? Because that's actually a question that one of my audience members was really keen on asking you. So I thought I would ask you that one.
Okay. So there are two things.
Mm-hmm.
Thing one is that, so we have all these imbalances from lifestyle choices. And estrogen makes everything nice. It chills, estrogen is very kapha. It chills everything out, it relaxes everything, it makes things beautiful and luscious. But we have all these imbalances, but because we have all this estrogen, it masks the imbalances. So all of a sudden the estrogen starts to drop because we're aging. And all of a sudden there are hot flashes, or there are ovarian cysts, or there are all these different things. Now, it's not that we just suddenly developed hot flashes. We've had the propensity for hot flashes all along. We just had estrogen masking it. So when the hormones shift, all of the imbalances that were previously there come up to the surface. And so it's often when women start to lose estrogen that they come into my practice and they're like, oh my God, I have all these things. And so we have to rectify the imbalance that was already present in the body. Usually it has to do with what we call Ranjaka Pitta, or the energy of the liver, combined with Vata Dosha, combined with some Ama. The second thing around periods, menstruation, hormone health, is really the connection to lunar cycles, which we have become out of tune with. And the more that we can get into rhythm with the cycle of the moon as waxing and waning, and our own energies in relationship to the moon, the more we will balance the endocrine system, balance the hormonal system, and then have much easier menstrual cycles. But really, menstruation and menopause, Ayurvedically, shouldn't be really uncomfortable. If they are, it's a sign that the body is out of balance and that we need to rectify, remove ama, and or balance the doshas.
Okay. Yeah. And your cycle with, your cycle should be more in harmony with the lunar cycle. So is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Well, we don't want to be like pejorative and say like, you're menstruating at the wrong time. You know, that feels like very blamey. So we don't want that. It's more that we need to value the intuitive, less linear space of the mind via meditation, via slowing down, via more lunar connection, in order to balance the endocrine system and the hormones.
Right. So slowing down more, and knowing that cramps, bad mood, hot flashes, night sweats, those are all symptoms or signs of an imbalance that is deeply rooted.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got a few more questions before you here, and I'm absolutely loving this. Let's talk about Nasyam and Neti. Okay. Is that for everyone, or what? And what would you prescribe? Or if you were to prescribe that, what is it used for?
So Neti is nasal washing with usually salted water with a pot, and Nasya is nasal application of oils. Neti is very useful in cases when there's a ton of congestion, like just tons of mucus. But as a daily practice, for most people, it is too drying. If you feel inside your nostrils, it's a moist area. It's a mucus membrane, right? And then you take salt and water and you wash it out all the time. It creates more dryness. And it actually begins to perpetuate the imbalance that was there. Hmm. Nasya, or the nasal application of oils, is very, very good in cases of allergies, seasonal allergies, usually mostly for seasonal allergies, though it can be done every day. Usually we use Nasya to treat everything between the ears and the clavicle. So if there's a station tube problems, if there is sinus congestion, if there's throat problems, then we use Nasya oil.
Okay. Because I had never tried it before. And then when I watched the Thrive series and you guys went into some of that, then what I did was I was warming some sesame oil and putting a drop or two in each nostril, and the calming effect that I found it had immediately on my mind, but also headaches.
Yes. It's very good for headache.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found that to be really, really helpful. So, okay. And then let's talk about enemas, because there is a huge surge in people doing coffee enemas and all kinds of stuff. And so let's talk about enemas and who they are for, and are coffee enemas recommended, not recommended?
So Basti is a whole branch of panchakarma or enema application. It's not my expertise. I know about Basti. It's really recommended for times when imbalances are deeply rooted. I get wary of anything that is a fad, anything that is a trend. Colonics, for example, Ayurvedically create horrific problems. And then, for example, there's a particular cleanse that people do frequently that I won't name, that I always get people in my practice, and I'm doing cleanup work on the cleanse because it creates so much imbalance in the body. And then they get on a yo-yo. They think like, oh, I feel really good on the cleanse. Now I feel bad. I better cleanse again. Oh, I feel bad. And it doesn't actually create balance in the body. It perpetuates imbalance. And so certainly Basti has useful, there are many applications and uses of Basti, of enema. Most people don't, well, that's, I don't want to say that. You need to know if Basti is correct for you at this time. Right. Everything is medicine for a particular person in the correct time. For example, like in Brazil, if a child has a fever, they give him a shot of espresso to ramp the fever up and to burn it out. This is like a pretty radical kind of like therapy, but it works because espresso is deeply bitter, which transmits air and ether, very cooling energy to the body. So anything can be medicine. We just need to know when to use it and how to use it. And like with herbs, I never say everybody needs something.
Okay. All right. Well, I've totally and thoroughly enjoyed having this conversation with you. I feel like there's so much to learn. And for anybody who is curious and may be interested in some kind of treatment or consult, where can they find you and what are some of your offerings?
So you can find me on my website, which is justinelimos.com. I do one-on-one consults, you know, where we take about an hour and a half to go through everything that's in the physiology. I do a lot of group programs, a lot of online courses on various aspects of Ayurveda, and those like come up periodically. So you can go to my website and get on my email list so you can get notified of those things. I also have an online community that is an app and a website that I think you can get a link for on my website. So, you know, just reach out. I always have things going on. Almost always the first place to start is, even though it's very time intensive for me, the first place most people really need to start is with an individual consult so that we really know what's going on in the body and so that we can take the correct measures for them. Group programs are wonderful. Like I do a 4-week Ayurvedic cleanse that's really good, and a 3-day Ayurvedic cleanse that are good for just about anybody. But group programs, like we have to be, if we're looking for individualized results, we usually need individualized recommendations.
Okay. And Vedic charts you do also for people as well? Like say they didn't want to do, maybe they don't want to change anything about their diet, but they're just curious about what, yeah. What their chart says.
Yeah, I do some chart reading. Always with Ayurvedic consults, I look at the chart mm-hmm. to just look at what's going on in it so we can, you know, get a feel. And then I also do some chart reading for people.
Okay. Well, I have K2 with my moon, and I think it's in my first or seventh house or something. It's an interesting chart, but well, I would absolutely love to chat with you further, but I know we're kind of running out of time here. So I just want to say thank you so much for sharing. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're wonderful.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And we'll keep in touch.
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye, Justine. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please remember to subscribe. Your Apple reviews are also greatly appreciated and will help to rank the show within the Apple matrix. So please feel free to go ahead and do that now. You can also become a member on Patreon at patreon.com/Shanti Ma. Until next time.